Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Here we go.
Afternoons on The Score.
What do we have? What did you put in for the show pot? What do we have?
We have a small play on the White Sox tonight at plus 115.
We're going streaking through the quad and into the gymnasium. Come on, everybody!
As the Sox trying to battle their way back once again.
Eloy cracks this ball. Deep center field. Bring him home. We are tied at two. That center field power is mammoth.
And that's all we have going tonight, unless Shep has something going that he has not mentioned. Maybe
he doesn't need to tell us.
Maybe we'll double play the White Sox.
No, it's cool. It's cool. I'm cool. Bring your green hat. Let's go. Come on, everybody. We're going.
Got to be a fastball here. 1-0. Jose rips it to left field and gives the Sox the lead. 3-2 Sox.
That's great. Well, I know that the plus 111, not great. There were better odds out there for the White Sox. Joe will have all the details.
He don't know nobody knows. Well, how come I late night?
What's Alex got in mind? Into the glove, two balls, two strikes.
Cutter away, you'd think.
On the ground at first, Jose's got it. Sox win again in Milwaukee.
How about that? First six-game road winning streak since 2015.
Kushingo. I made money on it.
The White Sox win. Print the banner. Line up the parade. Michigan Avenue on the Studs Turtle Bridge, Division Street.
Woo! We're streaking! We're streaking!
White Sox! White Sox! Go! Go! White Sox!
Let's go!
Yo! Saddle up! Lock and load!
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Will the White Sox ever lose again, Dan McNeil? I don't know.
Well, let's enjoy it while it's happening, Parkins. This sure has been fun, and I was entertained again last night, start to finish. It's gone very well during a six-game win streak, and I would have guessed a lot longer than that for the White Sox last six-game win streak on the road, as we just learned. We're reminded from last night's cast on NBC Sports Chicago that it was only 5 years ago. I would have guessed you'd have to go
further is time.
So very, very good stuff. And Cubs and Royals again tonight, Sox and Brewers again tonight, and it's all happening, Parkins. Our show pot is up, and I want to say this is a record high, but I might not be right about that. We have more than $2,100 in our show pot. I don't know if it's ever exceeded that. Shep is a guy who's sort of the tender of the show pot. Have we ever been at that level of prosperity?
I don't think so. I'm trying to remember what it was. You put $1,000 down our first week together when we did the famed Villanova Michigan bets for the Final Four. And I want to say that was kind of where it peaked, was right after Villanova won that title.
What about that infamous weekend where we started betting college football for no reason? What was it before then?
Yeah, that was the opposite.
Yeah, that was the New Year's Day. Let's get
New
greedy.
Year's Day massacre.
Oh my goodness, we I don't think we had anything the whole day.
Well, no, we didn't even have shows. You just started putting in like multiple $100 college football parlays. Like, we didn't talk about it. We got no content out of it. And then we came back after the holidays and the show pot was gone because we started investing in college football for some reason.
That's the old house money mentality that gets you buried. You can't look at it as house money. That's what I regarded it as instead of money earned. All that hard work we put into winning NFL games, and then I just threw it away on college football on New Year's Day. But that's always been my tradition on New Year's Day. I don't play much during the regular season of college football, but New Year's Day I like to just sit on the couch and eat deep dish pizza and watch a ton of college football, get those matchups you typically don't get.
I eat the pizza. All by myself. Nobody else eats. Eat the pizza.
I was saying that to myself today while pulling weeds. I eat the pizza. It's just see, that's I was telling you the other day that I don't like to bother my whenever I'm doing yard work. I don't put the headphones on. I want to dial in on making the perfect row when I'm cutting grass or I'm pulling weeds today. And so I'm saying out loud, I eat the pizza. I think Mailman John thinks I'm nuts. He drives by and sees me talking to myself out there, but I was doing Michael Jordan, eating pizza.
Mailman John, FedEx Frank.
Well, he actually is the mailman. He's my mailman.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
I was going to I was wondering if it was just the guy that was, you know, one of Mac's friends or the actual mail guy.
John's a mailman, huge score listener, a big Bernstein fan. Wanted to ask me if I heard Bernstein talking about Colorado State today, and I said, yes, I did. He is the conscience of college sports sometimes, and he's very good at that. And what he reported on Colorado State is reprehensible. And it's not a surprise that it comes from football people at the Division I level. I hate to say that, but it's how I feel about it. And I wouldn't be surprised if it were more prevalent, where guys are being threatened in terms of playing time reduction if they test positive and they're being dissuaded from even taking the test, which is absolutely that's criminal, really.
Yeah, listen, the college football, so if Bernstein is the conscience of college football, it's he does a good job of pointing out the bad stories within the sport, but there are just so many of them. It is often a sport without a conscience because it's just we're seeing it, right? Like the NCAA today canceled Division III championships. Because the NCAA runs the championships, the postseason tournaments, but it's the conferences that run the regular season. So D3 sports, not necessarily canceled, but the NCAA took it upon itself to say there will be no D3 championships in any fall sport. But why haven't they done that for Division I? Because Division I makes money. And so it is black and white as you could possibly make it. The NCAA... These sports that don't make any money, the NCAA is like, yeah, we're not going to be able to pull this off. Let's cancel it. Right. The ones that they can make money, maybe we can get around this whole issue of player safety, and we'll keep it going. We're going to talk to Teddy Greenstein coming up today at 4 o'clock. Just a quick overview of the news of the last 48 to 72 hours in college sports. You mentioned the investigation into Colorado State football with pressuring players about taking away scholarships and whether or not they would keep them away from testing. UConn, first D1 program to cancel football. Pac-12 athletes have formed a group threatening to opt out of all fall sports if demands for safety and social justice are not met. Over 1,000 Big Ten athletes have vowed not necessarily to opt out, but they have made demands of the Big Ten for increased safety protocols as it relates to the pandemic. Louisville has suspended activities for men's and women's soccer, field hockey, and volleyball after 29 positive tests. Three Big Ten football programs have suspended workouts, Northwestern, Rutgers, and Michigan State. Like, it's just every 90 minutes there's a new story in college sports, and Pete Thamel at Yahoo quoted a Power 5 athletic director saying, everyone's just playing a game of chicken, waiting for one conference to be the first one to cancel, and then that'll be the domino that starts the entire thing from falling over. So
yeah.
It's only a matter of time.
It is just a matter of time, and the Big Ten announcing its college football slate today, which is of course written in pencil. I don't know when the news will come. I've got a few feelers out there, hoping to get some information by the end of the week from some people who are in the know when it comes to Division I college football. It makes all the sense in the world to move this activity to late winter, early spring. You said yesterday when I brought that up, you think there will be too many guys who take a pass and just jump right to the NFL. And maybe that's the case, but so what? Really, if everybody wins as a result of moving it back, you get your television revenue. It's going to be tardy. You hate to not have it when you usually have it, but you still will get the benefit of a playoff. And you'll get it at a time of the year when people are going to have time for you. If they start this thing in late February and you finish it in right around the first week of May, yeah, you have to compete with baseball, but you're not competing against the NFL, and you're readying players for the upcoming NFL draft. So I think it makes all the sense in the world to do that, which is probably why it won't happen. It just makes too much sense.
Yeah, the thing is it so you, in your scenario, you just said start in December? Is that what you were saying?
No, late February.
Late February, okay.
Yeah, late February. Late February and have college football February, March, April, and have your playoffs in May. And then you can still have your NFL draft at its usually scheduled time. Maybe you back it up a little bit to accommodate the playoffs to make sure, you know, all of the games get concluded first. You won't have the
Well, there's no guarantee, because that's the thing here. There is no end in sight until any sort of vaccine happens, and then when a vaccine happens, it's going to take time to roll it out into the population. You have people who don't believe in vaccines. You've got to get it to frontline healthcare workers and essential personnel before you can get it to football players. This is going to impact sports next year. People should just – it's already impacting it longer than people thought it was going to. Think about the NBA. The NBA and NHL are doing an amazing job. There have been no positive tests in the NHL since they've started phase four of having all of the teams into the bubble, and they got everybody into Canada. And the NBA just released today another round full of tests. Every member, every team, support staff, personnel, zero positive tests within the bubble. The bubble plans for North American winter pro team sports are absolutely working. But the NBA, they're already talking about, what about next season? Are you really going to try to do a 7 or 8 month bubble? This is only a 3 month bubble. Are players going to be willing to do that next year, what they've done this year? And most people seem to think the answer to that is no. So if you don't have a plan where everybody is on board for a long period of time to be sequestered and bubbled, sports are going to get interrupted by the pandemic. And so I honestly don't know what pushing 4 or 5 months does if you don't have a vaccine and you don't have a bubble.
Yeah, well, I mean, it causes everybody to stop the freak in terms of getting it done this fall, because that seems to be where everybody's energies are going. And if you remove that as a possibility, people actually can catch their breath and get used to the idea that, yeah, this isn't going to happen. And you're right, it's going to affect sports and life for several years to come in around the world. There's not a question about that. And that's what's unnerving about it for all of us, is the uncertainty of how long things are going to be changed, and or if they forever will be changed. We certainly expect that to be the case in the workplace. The days of business trips, big conferences, those days are over. Companies are going to be saving money and doing everything virtually. And when you think about it, it makes an awful lot of sense. I still think that there's something that's missing when you don't have that FaceTime. But it was necessitated by a pandemic, but I think people are going to find out that you actually can function at a very high level by doing things that way. My wife is an attorney, as you know, and she's been working at home now since either late February or early March. And I can't remember the last time we had a conversation about when she's going back to work, because I think this is pretty much the way it's going to go. And I think that's how a lot of people are looking at things right now, that this is, as long as it's working and you don't have things that require face-to-face interaction, keep it parked at home and work remotely. People can be more productive that way, and I've observed at least the people around me who are working from home have a pretty high level of satisfaction over it. People feel like they have more control of their lives. They're not spending as much time commuting, not spending any time in some cases commuting. And, in my case, it's caused me to take more pride in the way my damn home looks. And I enjoy that.
We can't wait to see it.
Oh, is that right?
We can't wait to see it on Friday. coming to Maculands, man. I'm you're sharing pictures of your that's a lot of crab legs.
That was a haul today, man. It's like, wow, I was in the store for 10 minutes.
That's
rung
impressive.
Me up a bill real fast.
Guy brings out some fresh crab legs. Just came in. I got to give them to you guys.
Straight water.
The price tags on those crab legs were.
Zoom up?
Oh, I zoomed.
Yeah, the one that was visible was $103, right? I think.
Yeah, I saw two that were visible.
Yeah, one was 103 and one was 96. The others, right? They're $30 a pound. I've seen them a lot more expensive than that. And I wanted 10 pounds of legs, so I bought $300 worth of legs and $200 worth of booze and a box of Captain Crunch.
Did you get any looks from the people at the register or anything like that? Because that is quite an order.
Yeah, it really is. That tells you a little bit about what I did before I made the commute to my neighborhood grocery store.
Captain Crunch.
Yeah, I am very familiar with that move of like it's so dangerous because it can make the grocery store experience take a little longer, but it's absolutely 20% more expensive.
Everything looks good.
Everything.
Salute the captain. That's what we all want to know.
Yes.
Yes. Crunch de Capitan, as he is in Canada.
Oh, man. That is so funny. And Captain Crunch, I would imagine, not on your list at the beginning of your grocery store trip.
It wasn't. I looked at it and it screamed me. So I put it in the cart. Yeah. I know you guys have to commute, but I hope Steph and you will relax for at least a little bit and have a couple of drinks. I don't know you got to tell me what I need to get to make you your Moscow Mule. I have the vodka part of it. I've got a big
Belvedere
vodka.
You don't need
vodka.
To worry about it. That's very nice of you. I mean, it's vodka, ginger beer, and lime juice on ice. It's
okay.
It's a pretty simple cocktail.
Well, what about the glassware, Danny? Are you going to drink it?
Copper mug. Yeah.
Yeah. If you can get those copper mugs for Danny, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Excuse me. May I have a copper mug for my little buddy?
I got plenty. I got plenty. Okay. I can bring some. But no. Well, we will certainly relax. But we're looking forward to the commute, and we're looking forward to getting the kids in the pool. And it's going to be good to just to see you. You know, it's going to be good to have the whole mob together. We got the phenom on the board, so Tanny can come out and Shep's going to be there and significant others. It's going to be a lovely social distance hang. And you and I get 9 holes of golf in the morning. It's like our own little mob tailgate in Maculand on Friday.
Yeah.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
It's going to be fun. And I have decided not to take my driver to the golf course. I'm leaving it in the garage. I am done with it for the short term until I get some coaching on what the hell I'm doing with that thing that is causing me so much peril on the golf course. It's just, it's taken away from the fun of the game. That used to be what I got more joy out of than anything, was watching the ball get small real fast.
Yeah.
But I've lost it. I found it and then I lost it again. And it's 3 of the 7 drivers I hit yesterday were in the jungle. So I said, screw it. I'm just going to hit long irons off the tee until I get some help with that.
It's a tremendous amount of discipline. I can't do it. I just got the new sticks, and when they're good, they're good. And when it goes way right, it costs you a penalty stroke, and then you get angry, and you just gotta keep it moving. So I'm working on it, but I can't bring myself to like take the 5 wood off the tee and just knock it out there 200 yards into the fairway. I should, but I'm not there yet. What do you think our collective win streak will be at by the time we get together on Friday? We're at 11 right now, 6 for the Sox and 5 for the Cubs.
Well, Dallas Keuchel, even though he's won his 2 starts, has not finished a 6-inning outing yet. He's not been able to get out of the 6th in any of his starts yet this year. I'm a little irpy about the White Sox and Brewers tonight. I think I'm going to lay off the Sox tonight in terms of wagering. And the Cubs are a big favorite. I think Darvish is minus 200. Against the Royals, and we got one of those the other night, but I'm
who's the pitchers in this game?
Darvish is facing Chris Bubich, the guy who the White Sox roughed up in his first big league start. Adam Engel greeted him in a rather rude fashion in the second inning with a three-run homer in the kid's major league debut last week.
Yeah, and the guy going against the White Sox tonight, Adrian Hauser for the Brewers, he pitched against them in the exhibition game when they were getting ready to start this season up back in the last week of July or so. So the White Sox have seen this kid from the Brewers who's going up against Dallas Keuchel. I don't know, man. It's just both of these teams, they're on a roll. Like, Cubs need an insurance run because they're going to Craig Kimbrell. He ends up giving two of them back. They win by one, just the exact cushion that they needed. White Sox fall behind early. Giolito has a good game. Eloy, of course, with the monster home run, end up another come-from-behind win. It's just we are blessed right now with both teams playing such a high level of baseball that, they're beating up on bad teams and they're helping out each other. Cubs burying the Royals, taking them out of the equation. White Sox doing the Cubs a big favor, handling the Brewers. But it's just – it's multiple screen heaven every single night. Like, you're like, oh, you can't turn one away. You got to go back and forth with sound. It's not like any of these games are blowouts either. It's just really good baseball on both sides of town. It's been awesome.
Yeah, it has been. It's must-watch television for me. I didn't really realize how much I'd missed baseball, but I admit fully that it's because both teams are playing very, very well. If they would have, if the first couple of weeks of this year would have resembled last year, I wouldn't be expressing near the same enthusiasm. It's been a lot of fun, and both teams are looking like playoff teams right now. Long way to go, but they are tracking towards the playoffs. I agree with that. And hopefully the Blackhawks get a win tonight, Parkins. We need that thing to go in our favor.
Yeah, I mean that would be great. Another 9:30 start to keep as much Chicago sports going as possible. These late starts kind of I normally can in a previous life I would love it, but with a young baby at home, it's very difficult. I'm just so tired all the time that I'm like, oh, my God, tonight's another long night of just like the marathon of trying to stay up and watch all of the hockey. But I will give it my best effort again tonight. And, yeah, I hope the Hawks come through because once you get in, who knows what the hell's going to happen. John Morosi at 3 o'clock, Teddy Greenstein at 4. Theo Epstein, pretty overt in talking about Joe Maddon. He said in the past when Joe talked about him, he was going to take the high road. We'll see if we think that Theo did that when he referenced David Ross coming up on The Score.
I'm going to take the high road here, and that's easy for me to do because I love Joe, and I value our friendship, and I've got nothing but respect and appreciation for what he brought to the Cubs. Nobody on the planet, and I've said this before, nobody on the planet could have done what he did those first couple of years, changing the whole mindset, raising expectations, getting players to be able to, especially the young guys, to be themselves and be comfortable and thrive.
That was Cubs president of baseball operations, Theo Epstein, back in February when Joe Maddon did an interview with ESPN and talked about how the front office wanted to control more of what was occurring in just about everything, was his quote. And that clearly upset Theo, but he said that he was going to take the high road and went on to talk about his long history in the game and how he has no interest in that and he's only had to get involved in one or two things when it comes to managerial decisions or coaching hires. And it clearly was time for a separation between Joe and Theo. And I got to say, as someone who normally downplays the value of a manager, I'm looking pretty wrong, Mac, because David Ross seems to have this team very engaged right now.
Yeah, he does. And so far, so good. I would give him high marks. It's hard not to when they're sitting there at 9-2 and you're getting really good starting pitching and you're also getting really good offensive production from pretty much everybody in the lineup. Chris Bryant accepted, and he's played so little compared to the other regulars. It's difficult for me to be harsh on Bryant, who's hitting 161 and an on-base percentage that's not a whole lot higher than that. Yeah, he's done very, very well thus far. I'm not so sure I would have given Craig Kimbrell the ball when he gave it to him last night. I was a little bit surprised he trusted him that much.
Yeah, I would not have either. But just in terms of, like, that's what Theo said about you're right. I haven't agreed with every decision, and I certainly disagreed with Kimbrell last night. But in terms of what Theo said, we're going to play it here in a second. Just through the context of that, this sounded, when he was praising David Ross, very much like he was also not taking the high road with Joe Maddon.
The guy creates energy all by himself. He creates accountability. The players have so much respect for him that I think they want to do well for him. There's a sense of not wanting to let him down. I think for a first-year manager, he's been incredibly aware of all the little things that go into keeping an organization and a major league team functioning and humming along, anticipating problems before they happen, having those extra conversations. He's been self-aware as well, you know, sort of aware of his own lack of experience in certain areas or elements of his personality that maybe don't fit a given situation. And he's done a wonderful job delegating, empowering his coaching staff, empowering veteran leaders, challenging them to step up and do more, and they've responded. So yeah, I think it's been everything we could ask for, you know, to 1/6 of the way into his first season. But no, he's been along with the players, he's and staff, you know, obviously as a manager, he plays an important role in being responsible for the terrific environment that you see around here right now.
Theo, you just listed off all the great qualities of Ross there, but is there anything that's happened that he's pulled off that you were kind of questioning, like, I don't know how he's going to be able to handle this or how he'll do in this situation, that he's kind of impressed you with or surprised you with?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, his instincts for, you know, his instincts as a player on when to call out a teammate and when to go out of his way to be there for him, on the other hand, were always great. Like he always knew whether it was time for the carrot or the stick, you know? And I think there's always a question of how well that'll translate as a manager, because the nature of the relationship is different. It's just a different dynamic. And, you know, there's more instances when you have to call guys out. You can't sort of wait until things are obvious sometimes. And He's shown that same great feel, man. It's been really impressive, and including, you know, there are some things that, look, a baseball team, no matter how successful, always has like lingering issues, right? Well, this guy needs to work on this, or this guy's, sometimes he can be a bad teammate when he does this behavior and doesn't even realize it. Or, you know, it'd be really great if we could get this guy to focus a little bit more, this guy to work a little bit harder, and let alone the front office. We got tons of things we need to get better on, but he has stepped in and helped address some things that have been lingering for years, you know, and to do that his first month on the job, essentially, is a regular first 2 weeks as a regular season manager, is just really impressive. He just shows, you know, he's fearless, he's alert, observant, and, you know, has great emotional intelligence, knowing when to step in to challenge a player and call him out, and knowing when to step in and offer a kind word and support and make it really clear that he's got a player's back. So I think that's a big part of being a leader and being a manager in the major leagues these days. And he's just got really good feel for it. And he has not eased his way in. He's on it.
When he talks about addressing all of those issues that have been lingering for years, I think he wants to praise David Ross, but it's hard to take that as anything other than he's doing something that Joe Maddon wasn't able to do.
It, no question, is directed at Joe Maddon. And before he got to that phrase, which I wrote it down as well, lingering for years in quotation marks, because I think that jumps out at you. What are those things he's talking about? And it frustrates, because this is the same group of guys, minus Nicholas Castellanos, they lined up with last year and weren't very good. That it took a managerial change. I mean, it frustrates there wasn't more of that accountability from within the room if you're not going to get it from the manager and you weren't with Joe Maddon because that's just not his nature, it would have been perceived as fraudulent because he's not that way. He's just not wired that way. Somebody needed to step up and say, hey, we're a much better baseball team than this. Why are we having all these issues on the bases? Why are we playing so poorly and without focus defensively? They were bad in both of those areas last year, and they're proven good ball players, too good of a ball club to have had those type of issues. I wouldn't have gone so far as to say it had lingered for years, but that not only is an indictment of the manager, for me it's an indictment of the players who allowed it to just slip away, and they treated their job with such a come-si, come-sa approach. That's not acceptable when the expectations are and have been as high as they've been.
I agree. I think it's a chicken or the egg thing, though, right? Because Joe Maddon was the guy who would say, these are professionals, and we're going to do themed trips, and we're doing American Legion Week, and we're canceling batting practice, and I let those guys police the clubhouse, and they'll work it out, and as long as they respect 90, all is good, all is well, this will be fine, it's a long season. And Theo, at the end, would say, October starts in March, where's mm-hmm. the urgency? So we have been talking about that for at least the last 2 years, mm-hmm. about the difference between what Theo was looking for and what Joe was providing. Because I think Theo obviously knows that the vast majority of the World Series core is up after 2021. So there was a sense of urgency to win another ring with this group. And Joe wasn't getting that out of him. And Joe was perfect for the team in 2015. And Javi Baez doesn't become the player that he has become if not for Joe Maddon allowing him to play free and easy on the field and make some mistakes and grow into it. So for anyone like who's taking this as an overall criticism of Joe Maddon, they don't win 97 games in 2015 if Joe isn't the manager, and Javi Baez doesn't become an MVP candidate if Joe isn't the manager. So,
Boy, he's a great manager. I don't know if I'm as strong on that as you are, or as Epstein said a couple of sound bites ago when he said there was nobody on the planet who could have done what Maddon did in 2016. Wow. Really, that significant of an influence. And I thought he did a nice job, but sometimes the less you do winds up being one of the more productive things you do. He did let those guys, be themselves and treated them like adults. And as, after they taste a little bit of success and win a World Series, what did they prove? They proved they really didn't deserve to be treated like adults because, as Epstein says, lingering for years. That's focus he's talking about.
Agreed. Absolutely. Players and manager. And I think the players have to own plenty of it, and I think that the manager was responsible for some of it. They took on the personality of their manager. A lot of teams do that. And Joe was very carefree and laid back. But you talked about a baseball move, giving the ball to Craig Kimbrel. I was shocked that he did it, and I will be shocked even more if he does it again. Let's get into it before John Morosi, who's got some names that the White Sox could trade for potentially for starting pitching. Morosi at 3. We'll talk about Kimbrel next on The Score.
McNeil and Parkins flashback. Flashback.
How you feeling about your Cubs?
It's fun. It's funny because I was just talking to my nephew about it, who goes to a lot of games when I have my seats with me. I can't watch a whole game.
You know, I will admit that I didn't notice it when it happened until Shep's text, or I would have said something. He says it's fun, but he can't watch a whole game.
It's fun. I can't watch a whole game.
I was laughing before he even finished the sentence. It's so on brand for Hub. He's enjoying it, but boy, is it painful.
I feel bad
for him because I know what it's like to have a hang up with some element of your viewing experience and not be able to let go of it. What Hub cited to us was the awkwardness of empty stadiums or stadia, if you prefer. I was worried that was going to bother me as well. And it was one broadcast. It was the Cubs and White Sox when they had a summer camp exhibition, and I got used to it very, very quickly. I don't miss the fans in the least. I don't even think about it anymore when I punch in. I expect there to be nobody there, and there's nobody there. And that's how it's become normal for me already. It doesn't bother me in the slightest.
I prefer fans, obviously, so I notice it still. Like when there's a foul ball or a ball hit 400 feet and it goes foul and they trail it with the camera and it just goes past 12 sections of empty seats, it's hard for me not to be reminded of it. But it doesn't bother me during the broadcast. Like, those two things I can separate. I'd rather there be 40,000 fans at Wrigley. I think it creates a better atmosphere. I think sports are better. We talk about home court, home field advantage, those types of things, because it's fun. It's a cool atmosphere. We like being at the games. We like feeling like we're a 12th man in football and have some sort of impact and nerves and all of that sort of thing. But I don't really care. I don't care about any of it. Call me a nihilist for the things that have changed. Like 7-inning doubleheaders, DH in the National League, whatever. Like no fans, virtual fans, crowd noise. I have gotten used to all of it, just being happy that sports have come back. The only thing I can't get used to is Craig Kimbrell stinking. Like, and I should be, because it was ever since he's put on a Cubs uniform, he's been terrible. But every time it's like, oh, man, the Cubs have Craig Kimbrell. Oh, wow, he's throwing 97. Oh, man, he's getting barreled up. I think he's tipping pitches. I think that's what it is.
Spiegel has been insistent that he's been unwilling to learn to master the changeup. He doesn't want to throw it. He's very stubbornly hanging on to the pitcher he used to be rather than trying to evolve. And I'm not that sophisticated of enough of a fan to know that sort of thing. I'll take his word for it. Whatever it is, he's a fraction of what he used to be, and you're committed to the guy financially at a high level for some time to come, so you can't move him. There's nobody who wants him. He's just a loss for you right now, and you can't put him on the mound anytime the ball game is within three or four runs. You just can't do it. He is a garbage time either way. You're getting your brains beaten in or you're crushing somebody. That's when Craig Kimbrell next gets the baseball. And if David Ross does it another way, that's problematic, and he should be criticized for it. I don't think he will. I think last night, hopefully, was the last straw for him.
I was shocked they were going to pitch him with a two-run lead before Contreras hit the home run to give him three. And it would have been a mistake that would have cost him at least the game in regulation. Tanny, let's hear what David Ross said about Craig Kimbrell last night.
No, I don't preconceive anything before the game. Craig's been making some strides in the bullpen, and I wanted to get him some work, you know, hopefully with the lead. We were able to do that tonight with a three-run lead, bringing him in. He was in the two-run lead. It was nice that Willie gave us that cushion, really helped out tonight. But, yeah, I continue to say to you guys, I think that we really need Craig Kimbrell to be a big part of this bullpen, and we have to throw him. We have to get him innings and continue to you know, kind of judge where he's at according to seeing what the hitters do.
Ross, what was the conversation like when you went to pull Kimbrell out of the game?
He was just asking me, was I taking him out? And I said, yeah. That was about it.
Did you see him take any strides tonight? Obviously not exactly how you'd want the outing to go, but.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I probably, with the matchup that was going on, I just didn't, you know, his misses right now are into a good spot for Gordon, and I just didn't see that playing out for our benefit. And so I like the matchup with Kyle Ryan better, and so I had to make that decision.
Yeah, and I'm glad he made the decision, and I don't even disagree that the Cubs need Craig Kimbrell, because I've been saying this all season. They don't really have high pedigree guys with overpowering stuff that you would love to be lockdown guys at the back end of a bullpen. Like Kyle Ryan, Rowan Wick, they're fine, but they're not just like dominant plus-plus stuff type of pitchers. Right. Craig Kimbrell, when healthy and when effective, can be. So I got no problem with Craig Kimbrell pitching for the Cubs. It just shouldn't be in save situations. Up five or more, down five or more, middle innings. Like he can work his way back into being the closer. If he's truly not hurt, just throw him in low leverage situations. Why does he have to be the closer just because you haven't technically lost a game yet in which he's appeared?
Yeah, he needs to make a handful of clean appearances without getting touched, and at least three of them before you give him another chance in a tight ball game. And the other guys you mentioned have in the interim an opportunity to prove they can win the affection of their manager and get his trust and make it a very difficult decision for David Ross if they prosper. And maybe they will. You know, you never know what you've got until you give somebody a shot at it. And while it wasn't the plan going into spring training back in the winter, that's where you're at right now. And if you're going to keep waiting on this guy, I think you're going to wind up being sorry. I think somebody else is going to have to wind up earning that role. And hopefully they've got the guy on the roster who can do that for them.
Chicago and National Baseball, including who the White Sox could acquire for starting pitching reinforcements. John Morosi next on The Score.